Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Book Buzz, the show all about books. And I'm your host, Susanna Greenberg of Susanna Greenberg Public Relations. And today we will have an interview with a poet, James W. Gaynor, author of Everything Becomes a Poem, Poems by James Gaynor, coming out from Nemeton Press in November. Hello, James. How are you today?
Hello, Susanna. I'm fine, thanks.
It's great to have you with us. And let me tell you a little bit about James. James is a poet, an artist, an editor, and a writer. He's a graduate of Kenyon College. He lived in France for several years and taught literature at the University of Paris. He later worked as an editor at Grosset & Dunlap, Cuisine Magazine, Scriptwriter News, and Forbes Publications. He lives in New York City, and we have him here today to discuss his wonderful new volume of poems, Everything Becomes a Poem. So, James, tell us why the title, Everything Becomes a Poem. What's the origin and meaning of that title?
Well, actually, it seems to me sometimes it sums up, because everything does become a poem, or at least it does with me. When I was putting together the poems in this collection, I think the oldest one I started writing in 1968. And when I was looking back at the imagery that they all reflected, I just was aware of the fact that not only does everything become a poem, but I think everything is a poem. Every image that I process, I seem to do so in a variety of ways. And I think one of the reasons that I'm always drawn to poetry is that it is the art of metaphor and music. And I see things that I then hear. One thing makes me think of another. And I like that very much about writing poetry. I find that there are several levels on which you can do it. And so when I was looking at the collection, the final poem in the collection of 50-plus poems at this point, is that I could make a poem out of everything in the collection, which includes a baby, a crowded room, a cocktail party full of goddesses, a misplaced destiny, absent friends, and a subway pole, and that in fact all of this could be a poem, as well as every one of those images exists in its own separate poem.
So everything becomes a poem.
That it does.
Now tell us, who and what are some of your influences and why, be it poetry, literature, film, music, what writers do you admire, and what are the influences on your work, off some of the leading ones?
I think that I'd have to say the sort of overall largest influence on my way that I look at literature is Henry James, and part of that, I suspect, is the way that he used the semicolon, which I absolutely love and am constantly putting into my work and then removing from it, whether I'm writing paragraphs or poetry. But I like linked thoughts that are not necessarily complete in and of themselves, and yet they are. And that's the art of the semicolon. So Henry James sort of started things off, and I am an Emily Dickinson, I don't know what to call myself, fanatic isn't quite the right word for Emily, but I think that one of the things that awakened her poetry in me was this odd realization when I found that I was about 20, somebody pointed out that all of her poetry can be sung to the Yellow Rose of Texas. And I found that to be an incredible aid in memorizing poetry, because I really like memorizing poems. I think that appreciating them without the written word, the actual book or the page, is its own kind of a pleasure. I do enjoy that. That adds to it. And I like the fact that then in all of her poetry, not only do you have the rhythm and the rhyme, but then I also have the music of The Yellow Rose of Texas. So Emily Dickinson, and I have a dog named Emily Dickinson, who lives with my cat, Jared Manley Hopkins. I'd have to say that Hopkins is another of the big poetic influences on my life. I found his use of language astounding. And in contemporary poets, Billy Collins is just huge for me. I find such liberation in his work. I love that it's accessible and multidimensional and doesn't require an advanced degree to understand what he's saying. I think sometimes that is one of the most aggravating aspects of poetry, and one of the reasons that a lot of people don't like it, because they have been exposed to poetry that is incomprehensible. And the idea is, well, you have to work really, really hard and understand different cultures and possibly languages and mythology to then figure out what the hell the poet is talking about. And I really hate that kind of poetry. I don't take any enjoyment in that level of work. It's a little bit, for me, I also don't really like eating lobster. It's too much work. So I think that's sort of, I think that's a major metaphor there for me.
Lobster and poetry.
I also very much, very taken by the work of Gwendolyn Brooks, whose work just grabbed me. You know, I could hear her voice. I could hear the timbre of her voice, and I still can whenever I read her poems.
Okay, well, those are some nice influences. Now, some of your poems are translation and some on the theme of translation. Discuss that a little bit, how translation is a theme in your work.
Well, you know, overall, what I was saying was that overall, one of the things that has attracted and repulsed me to poetry at first was that idea of it being this sort of hidden elitist language, and you had to work really hard to understand it, and that means you have to translate it constantly. You're translating an image into an idea, and then a complicated image into a complicated or perhaps ultimately simple idea. But there's a lot of translation going on. At my time in France, I studied translation. I fell in love with many of the French poets, particularly Verlaine and Baudelaire, and I started working on translating them at the same time I was studying translation at the university there, and I was doing some translation for the national radio. And it was always very interesting to me, and one of the things that I found is that over a long period of time, very curious, if even a good translation of a poem tends to fall flat for me. And I've been puzzling over that for some time. Some of it is that you can't translate rhythm, you can't translate inflection, you can't necessarily hear the voice in the way that somebody who speaks, reads, and thinks in that language will hear it, will read it. And so I've started a series. There's one poem in this collection called Translating Verlaine in Three Easy Steps, which is a translation of a famous poem of his. It is raining in my heart. Weeping in my heart as it's raining on the city. And I started a translation of that in 1974, I think. And I realized about a year ago that even though I had come up with a translation that that I liked, it was still a little bit flat, a little bit like champagne that has lost the bubble. And I realized that for me, the third step was actually writing a poem about the poem, about the poet, about the process of translating the poem. So I did a translation of the poem and then a poem about the poem, and I had a lot of fun with it, and it was very interesting to me. And I think that's a lot of what poetry is constantly translating.
I see. Now, another theme that you write about is last lines of novels, and are working on a series on that, you've told me, and there is one in the book. So I'm going to ask you to play us out, as it were, with Dorothea Reconstructed, and I will repeat, it is from Everything Becomes a Poem, a book by James W. Gaynor, coming out in November from Nematon Press. It'll be available on all major online booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores nationwide. And again, James W. Gaynor from Everything Becomes a Poem. Would you please read us your poem about the last line of the novel Middlemarch by George Eliot, called Dorothea Reconstructed?
With great pleasure. The last line of the book, which I think is a poem in and of itself, reads, "But the effect of her being on those around her was incalculably diffusive. For the growing good of the world is partly dependent on unhistoric acts, and that things are not so ill with you and me as they might have been is half owing to the number who lived faithfully a hidden life and rest in unvisited tombs. She merited what is one of the best last lines ever, because the effect of her being on those around her was incalculably diffusive, and Dorothea embodied both a trend and a truth. Since the growing good of the world is partly dependent on unhistoric acts. Standing firmly in contrast to her sister, who is fond of geraniums but did not particularly care whether things are not so ill with you and me as they might have been, Dorothea Brooke Casaubon Ladislaw lived faithfully a life hidden in the environs of Middlemarch, but she does not rest in an unvisited tomb."
That was marvelous. And
well,
again, we just heard Dorothea Reconstructed, read by the poet James W. Gaynor, author of Everything Becomes a Poem. And yeah, we've been speaking with James today, and I'm Susanna Greenberg, your host, here at Book Buzz. And thank you for being here, James. And we
thank
will
you.
Say farewell. Okay,
farewell.
Thanks so much. Until we meet again.
Good night.